on this episode of Indiana Education Insight.
What do you think are some of the key components of EPIC, and how do you think these are going to help school superintendents be more effective in leading their school districts?
We surveyed all the superintendents in the state through your association, and we came up with six key elements that superintendents requested.
Every week, the Indiana Association of Public School Superintendents is taking you inside today's Indiana Education Collaboration and tomorrow's education trends. We're staying on the pulse of public school innovators throughout Indiana and beyond. Join our conversation and contribute to our upcoming topics at iapssin.org/podcast. Here's your host, Dr. J.T. Koopman.
Thanks for joining us on our launch episode of Indiana Education Insight. I'm Dr. J.T. Koopman. This podcast is being delivered by our IAPSS team, produced by Edge Media Studios. As Executive Director of IAPSS, I'm excited to bring you a weekly show where we feature Indiana education innovators all over the great state, from students to superintendents. We'll also be talking to higher education leaders and educators at the state level as we work together as proactive public education advocates. That's why IAPSS is here and why we're doing this show. As for me, I'm a lifelong Indiana resident with my entire educational career in public education as a teacher, assistant principal, principal, assistant superintendent, and superintendent. As you can imagine, I am very passionate about serving the needs of children attending Indiana public schools. I'm also the past president of IAPSS, so when the opportunity to become the executive director arose, I felt compelled to apply for the position. So I threw my hat in the ring, and the executive board of IAPSS threw it back, and here we are 3.5 years later. As with any organization, it takes great leadership to be successful, and that is one of the main missions of IAPSS, developing great school district leaders. One such initiative is a new professional development opportunity with IAPSS, partnering with Butler University in developing a program called EPIC. Every week, we're talking about a trending topic in public education while bringing in Indiana education innovators to hear their perspective. It's always great to have experienced and passionate educators joining the show, so let's get to today's conversation.
Topics and trends in Indiana education.
Today's guest is Deb Lechleiter. Dr. Deb Lechleiter is the Associate Dean for the Butler College of Education and partner with IAPSS with the new EPIC program, Educators Preparing Inspired Change, professional development program recently implemented for the Indiana school superintendents. Welcome, Dr. Lechleiter. We're thrilled to have you to join us on our very first guest as we launch this new podcast series for IAPSS. Can you share some of your background and tell us how Butler and you got involved in developing EPIC?
Thank you, Dr. Koopman. Actually, when I graduated from Ball State in teaching, I was a business teacher for 14 years, but I always wanted to learn more about leadership, and I was encouraged to pursue a principal's license by my then principal, William McCulley, at Lawrence North. And so I went to Butler for the EPPSP program, and I served as an assistant principal at Franklin Central High School. And during this time, I also served as a facilitator for the Indiana Principal Leadership Academy. And it was a coveted, program through the Department of Education. And it provided professional development to Indiana's principals. So several years later, I was asked to go to work at IPLA. And then I became the executive director. And during that time, many principals and superintendents in the state loved this program, and it was held in high regard. So they talked very fondly about IPLA and the impact that it had on their profession. And hundreds of principals in the state have gone through IPLA. So because leadership development has always been a part of my research and scholarly work, I began talking with others about what I could do when I went to Butler University. So I left IPLA, and I went to Butler University as a professor in their educational leadership program. And then I was asked to be the associate dean by Dr. Ina Shelley several years later. And she has given me unbelievable opportunities to pursue my passions. And one of those, as I said earlier, is leadership development. So I talked to Jim Halleck, who was a former superintendent, and said, what can we do with leadership development and how can we move this forward? And at the same time, you were doing this very same thing with IAPSS and trying to figure out a program. So we merged and we partnered together. And so how it has developed since then, because it's been over a year that we've started these conversations, but we wanted to make sure that we talked about business acumen and the importance of superintendents understanding a little bit more about the business.
If you could just pause right there, that would be one of the things that I'd like to probe with you a little bit about how is EPIC different than other educational leadership programs? And tell us why you think that's important for today's school leaders.
Great question. And I think the importance of the business and education working together, I think it's about collaboration. And I felt so isolated in a lot of the educational opportunities that I was pursuing. But then all of my friends in the School of Business were saying the exact same things, but doing it in a maybe a different way or a different language. But we were all talking the same thing about the same things. So we called and worked with the Lacey School of Business, their executive education program, William Gully, and we started partnering. But I think one thing that stands out that's very, very different is that not only is this a collaboration between business and education, but when you think about Indiana superintendents running a multi-million dollar corporation and acting as CEOs of that corporation, they needed more skill development in that whole business acumen. So we started the program and we're on our second session. We have our first cohort going through this year.
So obviously we've known each other for quite some time and I've always admired you and you've been a rock star in our profession for quite some time. So to have IAPSS associated with you and Butler University and the College of Education as well as the School of Business is just a dream come true for all of us. What do you think are some of the key components of EPIC and how do you think these are going to help school superintendents be more effective in leading their school districts?
Well, Dr. Koopman, first of all, thank you for that compliment because we feel the exact same way. It's just been such an honor to not only work with the Lacey School of Business, but with IAPSS also. So some of those key components, we surveyed all the superintendents in the state through your association, and we came up with six key elements that superintendents requested. So we started with building a high-performance team. How do you transition from that manager supervisor to the leader of teams and projects? And then our second conversation is about school board relations, board politics, contract negotiations, referendums. And we're going to go into strategy development. And then the big one that was number one on the list was finance and budget. And return on investment is such an important topic in these days. And change management. And then we're going to end with community or stakeholder outreach and communication.
Those are all absolutely pillars that every school leader needs to be well-versed in. Who are some of the other folks that are involved in this program and how are they involved?
Well, I will tell you one other aspect that we've tried to do with the EPIC program is we've really modeled it after the IPLA model where we really focus on people and make sure that we're really paying attention to what people need and want in their own learning. And one of the things that we're doing is we have a lunchtime where we serve lunch, obviously, but we also bring in a guest leader. And our very first guest leader was Dr. Jennifer McCormick, the state superintendent of public instruction. And I believe she was on the job for 2 or 3 days at that point, and she came and spent that time with us. We had Reginald McGregor from Rolls-Royce, and we have other community leaders. And so I think that's one of the great aspects. The other thing that we did is we have facilitators. We've also used that model from IPLA. So Dr. Jeff Butts from Wayne Township, superintendent, Dr. Jill Jay, director of our Butler EPPSP, Jim Halleck is a consultant with Keynote Consulting, yourself and myself. So we have five facilitators working So we all target and make sure that we focus in on the people that we're working with.
I understand each one of those facilitators also have been assigned a superintendent that's a member of the first cohort in EPIC. Can you tell us a little bit how that works and why it is an effective model?
Well, again, we believe it's so important to focus on the people. And so, for example, the superintendents that are in my group, I go ahead and I try to contact them in between sessions just to check on them. Or I even had lunch with one of the superintendents a couple of weeks ago because we're trying to work on a partnership together. So there's just lots of learning that can take place, not only during the time we're together, but outside of that learning experience.
Well, certainly, we've always felt that education is the relationship business, and effective leaders have effective relationships, so that's obviously a key component. Since you've been involved with education for quite some time, what are some of the trends that you see evolving today?
Well, I'll tell you, a couple of negative trends, but maybe things that I'd love to change. Two of the things, and I'm not going to spend any time about it because we all know that some of these things just need to be changed, but standardized tests, that's a trend that I think has gotten more momentum, and we've really got to have some discussions about how to change that.
And that could be a whole other conversation.
That's a whole other show. And then I also, equity issues. I think we have to figure out a way for our funding formula so that we have, that all students have equal access to high quality learning. But here are some positive trends that I think are happening. Applied educational neuroscience. We have a professor that has been working, Dr. Lori Desitel, who has, a neuroscience conference April 29th at Butler University, and just how our brains are wired and how students learn. We just finished a huge brain project. It's collaborative learning, and I think that's a trend that really is important that we need to focus on. And so Dr. Ina Shelley, our dean, and Catherine Pangan and Susan Kleinman all worked together to bring this one Butler, and it was the first major project for the university to all come together. So the entire university focused on this learning project, and we have 12 fiberglass 5x5 brains that came from Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor that are on our campus, and they're very interactive. And so we're hoping to have a lot of students and friends on campus. So that's another trend. But I also, another biggie that I think all of us know about is that whole tech savvy, that students are coming to us and social media plays such an important role in their learning. I use Twitter on a regular basis to read articles that I probably wouldn't have access to. But their devices are always in their hands. Butler University just launched a Clear Scholar program that is a big initiative. I think another trend that's coming is preschool, the focus on preschools and the importance. And I know my dean is very much not only a state leader, but a national leader. And then I think we just have to move away. I think one of the trends is moving away from teacher-centered approach to more of a student-centered approach, and I think that trend is a great one.
So with that student-centered approach, there's lots of conversations that are going on right now centered around personalized learning and things that students are going to be responsible for some of their own learning. Are we seeing that as part of the Butler Teacher Preparation Program?
Oh, absolutely. I will tell you, JT, the idea that students, we have to find out what they're interested in, what they're passionate about. We need to ask them. We need to listen to the student voice. And so I'm a big fan of Clayton Christensen, so I read a lot of his work. And one thing he says is hands-on learning that tests deeper learning metrics like critical thinking against real-world problems. That whole problem-based learning with an emphasis on critical thinking and collaboration, those things are important. So at Butler, we have a lab school. We have a Butler lab school, and it is inspired by the teachings of Reggio Emilia, Italy, and it's a project-based school, and we build our curriculum on the children's interests. So that brings back that whole student personalized learning.
So it would appear that much of the conversation, whether it be in state houses or whether it be in circles of educators, centers around promoting the profession of teaching. And we have created a teacher shortage for whatever reason. And so what can we do to stunt this teacher shortage growth, and how can we promote education as a profession that somebody would like to go into?
Actually, at Butler University, I feel very blessed that we're at Butler University. We take teaching very seriously. We have 100% placement rate, and I have the opportunity to work with professors that care deeply about their students and build relationships with their students. And they're so talented, they're hardworking, they're intelligent, and they're also very cutting edge. I mentioned the neuroscience, Dr. Lori Desitel. We also have Dr. Susan Adams and Dr. Brooke Candle, who wrote the curriculum guide for a documentary on Crispus Attucks that was called Attucks, the School That Opened a City. It was produced by Ted Green. Incredible opportunity for these two faculty. Dr. Brandy Oliver is in one of our counseling professors, and she is one of the leading researchers in the state on mental health, trauma, and anti-bullying. She was just elected as a member at large for a huge organization. And Susan Adamson, another one of our professors, is the director of the Indiana Partnership for Young Writers. Dr. Mindy Welch created an online certificate program called the Hinkle Academy for Wellness and Sport Leadership. So what we're doing is we're trying to stay out in front of what education should be and what it should look like. Our dean, Dr. Ina Shelley, is one of the most visionary people I've ever met in my life. This woman can foresee what is happening, and she has already tried to work through some of the teacher performance assessment that we're working on in the School of Ed, and we're out in front working on those things. So I think trying to help our students meet the demands of the 21st century, because education is changing. We need to change, but we also need students who are willing to change and will do what it takes and needs and for our profession.
Well, certainly with you and the other faculty members that you just alluded to, Butler is one of the stellar teacher preparation programs in the country. And you are doing some great things. If you could kind of take a look into your crystal ball, where do you see education evolving in the 21st century?
Well, I will tell you, I love that topic and I love that question, because I feel very fortunate that I'm in a place where we are allowed to be innovative and to showcase some of the things that we're working on. So I will tell you, I think your question is around trends and the crystal ball, what are we looking?
Right.
Emerging technologies. When you think about online, hybrid, blended learning, such as virtual reality, things that are coming out, the technology of 2017 is going to look different than the technology of 2020, and we've got to get moving and be ready for that. The other thing is, I think, especially in higher ed, you're going to look at degrees differently. There could be bundling of degrees and certificates and different ways that students are going to come to learn. I think we're going to have to figure out a way to look at data and how we measure learning differently. I think competency-based education, proficiencies, personalized learning, all of those things are going to be connected to real-life case studies. So redesigning learning spaces. I mean, I could go on and on, but I think that what we have to understand is that education is changing, and we have to change with it. I just read a book it really changed the way that I have thought a lot about education. The president and CEO of Lumina Foundation here in Indianapolis, Jamie Marisotis, wrote this incredible book called America Needs Talent, and it has profoundly changed the way I think about education. He really talks about restructuring our post-secondary systems around learning and not just seat time. And it focuses on talent. And I believe education is going to look differently. So we have to, you know, think about this. What if we had a more talented, more diverse, and better trained and educated populace? Well, the only way we're going to do that is with strong collaborations where we allow students to be critical thinkers, that they are culturally aware, that they have information literacy and communication, all part of their training in their programs.
Absolutely. Well, lots of issues could be discussed. And, you know, what advice would you have for current and future educators and educational leaders in educational circles?
What advice would I have for them? Well, I will tell you, education is hard work. It's not for the easy. I think that teaching is one of the most important things we can do. If we don't educate our students, then we're not going to be able to have the workforce that we need. So I guess you ask about advice.
Advice.
You know, I'm hoping that we have teachers who want to run for office. I think that we need legislators who understand education and the importance. And I tell superintendents this all the time. You have students sitting in your classroom every single day that could be the future physics teacher, the future math teacher. So we have to do a better job talking about our profession in a positive manner and valuing our profession. And I think paying teachers more, absolutely. I have said this for a long time, and I do think that we need to compensate. But we also have to have high-quality professional development, and we have to change the day of how. Teachers don't even have time to work during the day collaboratively. They just teach all day long, where we have to change our structure. So that advice is just, you know, be passionate, be a part of the system, but we have to value our profession in a better way.
Well, certainly we absolutely agree on that as professional educators, and I certainly have never understood why we're demeaning public education in the way that we are when it's the very fabric on which this country was built. So it's never made any sense to me. It has the power for home values. It has the power of economic development. It has many, many things that are attributes that in a capitalist society that would be beneficial. So it has never made sense to me why we talk negatively about public education. Interestingly enough, we had some millennial representatives and senators stand before a microphone, I believe it was yesterday or the day before, talking about the very need that you spoke to of getting people involved, especially young people involved in running for office and extending their hands across the aisle in collaboration. And that was one of the things that you mentioned as a building block for what we see as our future. Anything that you'd like to say in closing?
Well, obviously, Butler University and IAPSS have forged this partnership, and we're here in Indianapolis. And I just keep thinking about what an opportunity we have to make education a priority in our community. And if we could make education a priority in all our communities all across the United States, can you think about what an impact that would have, not only on our what you mentioned, the economics, but think about crime and all of the other things that if you don't have an educated populace. So I just think that we've got to have those conversations, and we have to break down barriers, and we have to bring everyone together, business and education together. And that's why we wanted to form this partnership with business, education, and superintendents association so that we could form the EPIC Academy.
All of that certainly makes sense to me, and I want to thank you for being with us today. You've done a great job. We really appreciate the opportunity to partner with you and Butler University with EPIC, and we feel like that's going to make a difference with educational leaders in the state of Indiana. Up next this week, we're featuring a national education online trend that is relevant to our local Indiana institutions. This is a must-pay-attention moment, and that's right now.
A national trend that's impacting Indiana. It's time to bring in our featured panel for 5 on 5. 5 questions for our experts, 5 expert answers.
Joining us in studio is Joanne Jewett, Chief Accessibility Officer with Site Strategics. Joanne, thanks for joining us in studio for 5 on 5. You have 25 years of experience, and schools have worked hard to make their facilities accessible and compliant, such as building ramps, enlarging doorways, and installing safety rails. The newer challenge for schools is, with the increasing use of digital space, is to build the same type of accessibility for all users. So talk to us a little bit about what is web accessibility.
Web accessibility, in just a few words, means that anyone, regardless of ability, should have the same or equivalent access to a website. Now, it could mean that they get the access in a very different way than I might or that you might. So if I had a visual impairment, there might be a different way I need to access that website. But web accessibility means I still can access the same information. I can engage with that website in the same way.
That's interesting. So there are actually laws that require school districts to ensure that their electronic resources are accessible?
There sure are. There have been laws on the books for quite some time now, since the 70s. But let's stick with the one that I think most people know about is ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act. And that law governs, we often think about that it governs that we should build ramps, we should put in safety rails, those sorts of things. But it also governs electronic resources. So the ADA says that those electronic resources have to be available to people regardless of their level of physical, cognitive, motor abilities.
So what type of electronic resources are we speaking to, especially for school districts?
Certainly the forward-facing websites and all of the information that would be as a part, what we would call enclosed in that website. So it might be there's a form that someone would need to engage with, fill out, send back in. It could be a PDF that they need to pull up for a certain kind of information. It could be maybe a student who is pulling up maybe a Word document. So all kinds of information that is forward-facing for students, parents, the community wanting to know something about, let's say, transportation or an event at the school, let's say. So all of those electronic resources that face the public, all of those fall under the ADA.
Well, that's interesting. So much like we would with different languages, where we have our forms and memos in different mm-hmm. languages to meet the needs of our various students, we're also mm-hmm. speaking of the same thing for web accessibility. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. And actually, that's a great example that one of the things that we also talk about with web accessibility is plain language. That is a part of the ADA, is to say that instead of using jargon and technical language, let's say you could do that on one of your pages, let's say about transportation or about maybe a particular policy issue, that a web accessibility expands even to the use of plain language to make sure that the broad audience can actually engage with that information.
Well, certainly this is not well known mm-hmm. and something that I think all educational institutions need to be aware of. We can see ramps, we can have electronic accessibility doors, we can have a variety of those things. How does a district know if its website is accessible?
The easiest way for them to find out is to conduct an audit. The audit, there are some automated tools, some that are free, and I've talked with a lot of CTOs around the state, and they're engaging in that basic level of automated testing, which is really great. It's nice to see that that's happening. But one of the things that happens is you also have to read the results. And the fact that you can use an automated tool, that gives you maybe about 60% of the access that you need to the information. The other 40% needs to be done with manual testing. So, for instance, can I use my keyboard effectively as I go through a website? We highly recommend our accessibility team that I'm representing here today, we highly recommend that you use professional testers and conduct a professional audit so that we can tell you the great successes that you're having, but also where the gaps are and recommend how to fill those gaps.
Well, with this being a very complex issue, how many people are out there like you to help school districts do these kinds of things?
Not very many. And I'd like to say for our team, we're the only team that I know of that is putting first and foremost schools as our specialty. There are other testing and accessibility professional agencies out there, but they cover a wide range of accessibility issues, let's say in government, corporate issues, those sorts of things. But we specialize in helping schools. And so we would like to think that people want to come to us as the expert in that K through 16 arena, so that we know what the schools are facing and how we can help them address those accessibility issues.
Well, IPSS is very fortunate to be partnering with Site Strategics, and I believe that we're going to have you join us for our spring district meetings and talk with superintendents about web accessibility. So we really appreciate that opportunity. And certainly in our world, when we talk about the Office of Civil Rights, that will send shivers down our spine. How can we best avoid having the OCR come in and investigate our web accessibility?
The first thing that we recommend is to have a plan. It's awareness, to really be aware that you most likely do have some gaps. If there hasn't been a full-fledged plan for accessibility, my guess is that there are some gaps. And so the next step is to plan for how you want to fill those gaps. The OCR really wants to see that. They want to see you're aware there could be issues. Are you making a plan to take care of those issues? Then that plan should include assessment, remediation, and long-range planning so that accessibility is always on the front end of all of your development.
Great. Well, we're very fortunate to have someone of your expertise that's going to be joining us, and we certainly thank you for joining us on our program today and explaining a very complex but important topic. So thank you for being with us, Joanne.
Thank you.
Now it's time to wrap up this launch episode with my take on current state of affairs in Indiana education landscape.
Dr. JT's closing comments.
Unfortunately, in Indiana, it appears we have a war against public schools and promotion of charter schools and private and parochial schools supported by vouchers. Vouchers are taxpayer dollars supporting non-public schools. IPSS has fought against this issue since it was introduced. But now, Indiana is the leading state in the country offering taxpayer support for non-public schools. It seems counterintuitive since we have clear direction from our founding fathers with separation of church and state. Perhaps we can pursue this issue in another segment of Indiana Education Insight. On the next episode of Indiana Education Insight, our featured topic is why it's important to market your school district. Talk to us and listen to our podcast on demand at iapssin.org/podcast. We'd love to hear your feedback, comments, or questions. Until next week, stand up for Indiana Public Schools and stay involved.